Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. On today's show, I'm speaking with David Rogers, who is the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, of Oregon. The nonprofit, nonpartisan organization hosted a forum in Astoria Thursday evening to discuss the group's current legal, legislative, and outreach work. The mission of the group is to preserve and advance civil liberties and civil rights. In particular, the ACLU has been at the forefront of challenging the new presidential administration's policies on immigration and deportation, travel bans, and freedom of speech and assembly, among others. Before joining the ACLU of Oregon about 2 years ago, David Rogers previously led the Partnership for Safety and Justice, a statewide advocacy group working toward criminal justice reform. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
For those who may not be familiar with the ACLU, explain what it is and what you do.
Sure. So the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon is a state affiliate of the national ACLU. And essentially, ACLU is dedicated to protecting and advancing the civil rights and civil liberties established in the U.S. Constitution. You know, we're often both the first and the last line of defense for civil rights and civil liberties. Our motto, I think, gives you a good sense of who we are. It's because freedom can't protect itself.
Okay. What particular freedoms have you been finding your organization needing to protect most recently?
Well, I'll tell you, we've been incredibly busy, but we often work on a wide variety of issues, protecting the First Amendment to working around advancing reproductive freedoms, to racial justice, to the rights of protecting the rights of immigrant and refugees. We've always been heavily involved in protecting the rights of the LGBT community. Since the election, things have really been pretty overwhelming, actually, for us. You know, Trump, during the election, made a bunch of campaign promises. And I think that, you know, after the election, shortly after, we were really speculating, probably all of us were speculating around would he moderate his positions at all? To a large degree, right, he's really trying to deliver on the wide range of pretty scary things that he promised. So he's trying to amass a deportation force to remove millions of undocumented immigrants who are part of our community. He's tried to deliver on his promise to ban the entry of Muslims and to institute aggressive surveillance programs to target them. We're really bracing ourselves for a wide range of additional civil rights and civil liberties challenges to come, and we've been ramping up work in a variety of ways in these areas.
Okay. Explain what exactly the ACLU does to fight against presidential policies you feel work against the Constitution.
Sure. Well, it's important to know that, you know, we're fundamentally a legal organization, and so we engage in litigation lawsuits, but we also think that there's not a single strategy that is going to get us to where we need to be. And so we utilize a wide range of strategies. Litigation, legal work is one of them. We think that it's really important to engage in focused and strategic research, public education, organizing, legislative advocacy. We're heavily involved in the Oregon legislature, and we work really hard to mobilize not only our members, but work in coalition with others. worked to shortly after the Muslim ban 1.0 that came from Trump's executive order. We were immediately active, had a daily presence at the Portland airport. We created a hotline to ensure that people who had concerns could reach out to us. And then in a course of about a week, we worked on behalf of Unite Oregon to file a lawsuit against the Muslim Ban 1.0, and we've been actively engaged in continuing to work around these issues. And but it's not just legal work. I have to say, earlier, just about a month ago, when Oregon's first DACA youth, Francisco, was picked up by ICE, you know, we mobilized Oregonians around the state to call ICE on Francisco's behalf. And literally, all of the people who participated, we collectively shut down the ICE phone system, and he was fairly quickly released. And I think that was a great victory that wasn't a legal victory, but really it was about collective grassroots mobilization.
Okay. Would you explain what DACA is again for those who might not be familiar with that?
Yeah, it's called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and it's a federal program that the Obama administration helped create that was for undocumented youth who arrived in this country when they were young, and have been an active members of our community, and it allowed essentially for them to be able to sign up for this program to provide. And as they entrusted themselves to the government, it would essentially allow them to stay here legally and with certain commitments and promises. And really, the new immigration policy under the Trump administration is, essentially turning their back on the agreement that those youth had by signing up for the DACA program, and people are essentially being rounded up for deportation. And, it's one of those things where, you want the U.S. government to be trustworthy, and it's a broken commitment.
Okay, and what is the status of Francisco's case right now?
It's still pending, and so he was released, but he's still going through the court proceedings. So there is actually the potential that he would be deported.
Okay, and where was he originally from?
That's a good question. He was, I think, I'm not sure.
Okay, it really doesn't matter. He's lived in the United States virtually most of his life.
That's right.
Okay, so that raises another question then, that you don't work only for American citizens, but people who live here.
Well, the important thing to note is the U.S. Constitution really applies to everyone who's within our country. And so, we want to be able to ensure that we're upholding the promises that are in the U.S. Constitution.
Okay, so regardless of whether someone is an American citizen, if they are in this country, the liberties that apply to all of us apply to them as well.
That's correct.
Okay. I know you also were involved or are involved in the recent parade in Portland that became violent, and the police put a stop to the parade to stop the violence, and the ACLU felt that was a big overreach of the police's powers to restrict freedom of assembly. Can you say more about your efforts in that particular case?
Well, our efforts are really multifaceted. We are building a team of legal observers who are, able to have a presence on the ground. And they're really meant to just be neutral observers who are there to be able to record and videotape what's happening. We think that the presence of legal observers can actually help ensure that things don't evolve into terrible and dangerous situations. I think that to a large degree we've been concerned about a number of different dynamics. Over the years, there has been an increased militarization of police, and that in of itself, I think, is a problem. It's really intimidating. It creates a kind of us versus them dynamic that really shouldn't exist. And when police show up in a heavily militarized presence, in so many ways, it escalates the situation and can create dynamics that we really don't want to see in our streets when people are marching and demonstrating peacefully. And so, you know, our sense is that the police presence should really, if it's there at all, it should be focused on de-escalating, and should be focused in a very strategic and targeted way on people who are breaking the law. And it's troubling when you have families and children and people who are out really just to exercise their First Amendment rights, who then end up being tear gassed, being pushed around without clear direction, but they don't know where to go. It's incredibly dangerous, and bad things are going to happen. And so we've been trying to communicate to the city and to police leadership that we think their engagement needs to change. They need to be focusing on de-escalation, but that's exactly we've been receiving essentially the opposite of that. And so, you know, we think it's a violation of people's constitutional rights. And, you know, there's more work that needs to be done. And you know, I don't want to kind of foreshadow too much of what it is we're looking to do. But, you know, there's more that we will be doing for sure.
Okay. What do you do, or what do the police do, though, when there are a handful of demonstrators, or maybe they're not really demonstrators, they want to get attention, they're breaking business windows and creating vandalism and causing some violence. So what should the police do to ensure that nobody is hurt?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, when people are breaking the law in that way, and, you know, we believe in accountability, you know, but and so the police absolutely have the ability to engage and to arrest people who are, you know, destroying property, engaged in vandalism. But, you know, what we have seen is police engagement that hasn't been targeted towards the really small group of people who are engaged in that activity. It's been much more sweeping, focused on the, you know, the hundreds and thousands of people who are there just to be able to peacefully exercise their right to protest. And I will say, at this particular point in time in our country, it's important that people are visibly protesting. Visible signs of resistance help actually break the isolation, help demonstrate that, in fact, we can push back on what it is we're seeing from Trump. And so in that respect, I think, you know, they're not drawing the line in the ways that are needed.
Okay. It's a big overreach, as you're saying.
That's right.
Okay. Explain what the ACLU is doing regarding internet privacy restrictions and protections.
Sure. So this is an area that's actually pretty important. Earlier this year, the Congress passed and Trump signed a law that essentially repeals some pretty important consumer protections that were in place, that prevented, for instance, internet service providers from being able to essentially sell private information without people's permission. So it allows internet service providers to essentially sell the information about what websites you your browsing history, what websites are you visiting, and other kinds of information, to be able to sell that without, and to provide it without your approval. And so, you know, it's a very serious problem. So right now, one of the things that that the ACLU of Oregon has been working on is to support a bill in the legislature that here in Oregon that would essentially create state-based protections. So this is a perfect example of the way the ways that states have an ability to push back on some of what we're seeing coming from D.C. and that and to pass its own our own state specific protections. And so, what I would love to be able to tell you about a little bit more about that bill. I think legislators need to be able to hear from Oregon voters and to make sure that. And so that they know that this is something that Oregonians want to see more of.
Okay. If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with David Rogers, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon. This is Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to a pre-recorded edition of Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. I'm Joan Herman. Today, I'm speaking with David Rogers, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon. The ACLU held a community forum in Astoria Thursday evening to share the group's current legal, legislative, and outreach work. And David, right before the break, you were talking about some work the ACLU is doing regarding internet privacy restrictions. Would you say more about that, please?
Sure. So, let me just say that we're working really hard to try and protect internet privacy in Oregon. You know, the information that internet service providers collect, it varies, right? They collect information about the websites that we visit, how long we stay there, location information, time of day. This information can reveal very intimate details about our lives, including our religious practices, our medical issues, our sexual preferences, and the information just shouldn't be used, shared, or sold without our individual express permission. And you know, for most people, using the internet, it's a necessity. It's not a luxury. It has become an essential part of our life. We need the internet for work, for school, to check our bank balance, to order medication. And so we shouldn't have to choose between privacy or fulfilling our basic needs. And so, you know, this is the dynamic that's being set up if internet service providers can essentially just sell our information without any say. So there is now a bill, it's House Bill 2813 in the Oregon Legislature, and it would actually create those privacy protections that we really need. And so we're hoping that people join us to tell Oregon legislators, "Hey, we want you to stand up to big business interests that seek profit off of our sensitive information, and we want you to amend and pass House Bill 2813. We think this would be a huge step forward towards increasing consumer privacy protections.
Okay. Do you have a sense of how well the bill is doing in terms of its chances of passing?
Well, I'll tell you, just in the past week, we helped mobilize over 2,000 people to communicate to the legislators. I think it should actually have a work session in the next few days. We're feeling pretty positive about it, and we're gonna stay optimistic. But I will say that the more that legislators can hear from individual Oregonians, the better.
What would you say to somebody who says, "I have nothing to hide"? Why should I care if they know my browsing history?
Well, you know, I think it should be an individual choice. And if people, feel that way, that's great for them. But, you know, other people might not feel that way. Maybe they recognize that they have a medical condition that they don't feel like they want to have advertised to the world, that they don't want their private browsing history to be sold for profit without their permission. And I'd say for those people who say, like, "I have nothing to hide," that's great. But the rest of us should be able to have privacy protections if we'd like them.
Okay. How is the ACLU funded?
You know, the ACLU is funded primarily from the support of individual members and individual contributors. And so on occasion we get foundation grants, but largely it's individual contributions that help us do the work that we do.
Okay. And I heard that after the election of Donald Trump in November, your donations nationwide went up quite a bit. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. It's the outpouring of support has been tremendous. You know, we are now over 40,000 members statewide, and I have to say that we are deeply appreciative. And you know, in all honesty, the support is it's incredibly needed. I have to say that before the election, we were receiving between 2,500 and 3,000 requests for support to our legal intake process annually. And, you know, the level of need to strengthen and bolster our work right now has been tremendous. But I will also just say, and so we have definitely received a real influx of support, and we're trying to use every dollar that's been contributed to us to strengthen our work and to increase our programmatic impact. And, you know, just like the legislation that we were talking about around protecting internet privacy and to create consumer protections, I think that that's a really good example of the fact that the ACLU of Oregon is not just pushing back on the damaging policies that we're seeing coming from the Trump administration. We're also trying to move proactive work here in Oregon. And, you know, I think that when you live in Oregon, we don't have to be stuck entirely in a defensive position. And that actually gives me hope that this is a state where we can actually move proactive, progressive policies forward. And right now, during the legislative session, this is a great opportunity for us not to just be focused on resisting some of what we're seeing from the Trump administration, but to try and actually make Oregon a better state.
How did you get involved in this line of work?
Well, I worked with the ACLU as a coalition partner over the years when I was the executive director of the Partnership for Safety and Justice, which is a state-based advocacy organization here in Oregon that works to make our criminal justice system more effective and also more just. And criminal justice issues are really a point of passion for me. And it's also an area where the ACLU of Oregon will be getting even more involved in. I think that there's a lot of room for us to be able to do better. And I'm really optimistic that we can make significant changes.
Anything specific regarding criminal justice reform the ACLU wants to tackle?
Well, there's one thing that's up in the legislature right now that we're really excited about. We worked really closely with another statewide organization called Unite Oregon, and also the Attorney General, and there's a House Bill 2355. So there's a House Bill that we've been working really hard on, House Bill 2355. And it would do two things that I think would be really, really significant for Oregon. One is it would help Oregon take a giant stride forward in terms of addressing law enforcement profiling. One of the things it would do is it would actually mandate that all law enforcement agencies collect and report demographic data for both traffic and pedestrian stops. And so with that data, we can identify where profiling may be happening and if there are specific problems in specific places. Without that kind of information, it's really hard to tackle profiling. And so that would actually catapult us very, very far ahead. The other thing that House Bill 2355 would do is it would actually defelonize simple drug possession. So essentially, it would make small-scale drug possession a misdemeanor rather than a felony. Now, this is a huge step forward, right? We know that the war on drugs has failed. We know that a focus purely on arrest and punishment isn't going to solve addiction. But meanwhile, keeping small-scale drug possession a felony ruins lives, right? As soon as someone gets that felony conviction, that follows them around for the rest of their life. It makes it harder for them to get housing, to get a job, to get a student loan. And so defelonizing small-scale drug possession really moves us forward in the right direction. We need to start emphasizing treatment and prevention, not harsher punishments. And so I'm really excited that House Bill 2355 has a legitimate shot of moving forward. And it's been interesting to see that Oregon is considering this seriously at a time when our U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is actually trying to ramp the war on drugs back up, even though it's been acknowledged in a bipartisan way that it's been a failed strategy.
Okay. Would this be for all drugs?
It would be across the board, yes.
Okay. Wouldn't that make drugs more easily accessible to children?
No, not at all. It doesn't change the way people who are selling drugs are managed in the criminal justice system. If anything, it would probably actually free up more resources for law enforcement to focus on more serious offenses.
Okay. Are there any other particular bills or efforts in the legislature that the ACLU is working on right now?
There are a wide range of things. We've been working to advance a bill on, along with allies in the Pro-Choice Coalition of Oregon, to advance the Reproductive Health Equity Act. And the Reproductive Health Equity Act essentially acknowledges that Oregon is a state that has no statutory restrictions on access to abortion or other reproductive health services. But just because there's no statutory or legal restrictions doesn't mean that people have access, that there are still financial barriers, for example, that limit people's access to reproductive health care and abortion. Someone might actually have health insurance, but they would have a huge deductible that they can't afford. And so the Reproductive Health Equity Act essentially says, look, we need to break down the barriers that people have to accessing reproductive health care. It should really be guaranteed for all Oregonians, regardless of for the full range of preventative reproductive health services, zero out-of-pocket costs, filling the gaps in reproductive health coverage, prohibiting discrimination based on reproductive health care, and ensuring access to abortion without government interference.
Okay.
That bill is being advanced, and I think has a legitimate shot this session.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to stop you because we are out of time. I want to thank my guest, David Rogers, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Oregon. The nonprofit, nonpartisan organization was in Astoria Thursday night to host a forum about the group's current legal, legislative, and outreach work. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives is heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, or streaming live at coastradio.org. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. Thanks for listening. Thank you.